Hello. Since the early years of the 21st century, a group dubbed the New Atheists have been waging a verbal war against religion. The language they employ is unrestrained. Christopher Hitchens was fairly typical when he wrote in his book, God is Not Great, "Religion comes from the bawling and fearful infancy of our species and is a babyish attempt to meet our insatiable demand for knowledge." Richard Dawkins has declared that his aim is to convert religious believers to atheism by helping them to overcome their childhood indoctrination in order to break free of the vice of religion altogether. Where has this new militancy come from? How does it differ from the atheism that went before? Who are the new atheists? Joining me to discuss atheism today are Professor Simon Blackburn, who's Vice President of the British Humanist Association, Mark Embleton, a chartered psychologist and President of Atheism UK, and Lois Lee, founder of the Non-Religion and Secularity Research Network and a postdoctorate researcher in sociology at the University of Cambridge. Simon, what sort of atheist are you?
Well, it's not a word that trips off my tongue, actually. I dislike the term because it implies that there is an issue which we all understand, a question, and some people answer yes and they're theists, and some people answer no and they're atheists, and some people say we don't know and they're agnostics. My own view is it's much harder than that. It's very much harder to define, as it were, what the content of religious belief is supposed to be. In fact, a number of philosophers would deny that you're in the realm of belief at all. You're much more in the realm of ritual, dance, poetry, emotion, attitudes towards life. So the very issue of whether there's a metaphysical question here, a question about something that exists or doesn't, is itself quite problematic to philosophers. And I think one thing that makes the new atheism something that I sort of have a hands-off relationship to is that they seem to find it easy to think that the issue is definable, whereas I think that's the hard bit.
Mark, I think you'd be quite comfortable if I called you a new atheist.
Yes, thank you very much. For myself, there are various ways to describe atheists, which I don't think are particularly helpful for people outside the atheist sphere. For example, I hear atheists referred to as weak or strong, or soft or hard, or passive or active. I would define myself really as a strong, active atheist, which sounds like I do lots of sports, but actually doesn't.
Lois, are you happy to call yourself an atheist?
I am. I'm here primarily in a professional role of researching atheists, who are atheists being the subject of my research. But to do good scientific research, we need to consider our own assumptions and what those might be, directions they might be pushing us in. And I maybe wouldn't call myself an atheist. It wouldn't be the first word I chose like Simon, but I'd certainly call myself non-religious.
I'd like just to do a little bit of defining of terms before we start, Lewis. For instance, define the difference between secular and atheist.
Now, secular is a really horrid word that has two meanings, one which is much closer to atheism, one which is much closer to secularism. Secularism is about where we think the line between religion, or what we think the role of religion should be in certain spheres, and we normally talk about the public sector. Atheism is about theism specifically, as taking a position towards God that is non-affirmative. Being secular is one of the most problematic terms in terms of research discussion, in terms of popular discussion, because it can be associated with either of those things.
It's got a very long history, atheism. I want to move away from secularism. We're talking about atheism today, and it has a very long history, Simon. I think even within religious traditions, for instance, Buddhism is, in its purest form, is atheistic. Confucianism is at least agnostic. But the Greeks especially, there's a strong evidence for lots of Greeks who took an atheistic position.
Oh yes, the early Greek atomists are the most famous, and perhaps Epicurus may be the best known of Greek atheists. Of course, there's doubt about whether some people who had certain kinds of religious inclinations, Plato is perhaps the most famous, should be called atheists or not. Plato certainly believed in a transcendental element in human nature. On the other hand, it's very doubtful whether he believed in a personal god, a single personal god, or in the gods of Olympus. So classifying people as atheists or not is not always easy. But certainly there have been out-and-out atheists, like I mentioned Epicurus, and coming on into the 17th century, especially after the Christian centuries, you get quite outspoken atheists, especially in France. Unfortunately, the term often had an association with being a libertine and somehow immoral or amoral. People found it hard to understand that you could be a moral person, although you had no particular belief in a personal God that was looking over you and would thump you if you did the wrong thing.
Mark.
The Enlightenment movement had a great base in Scotland. Scotland and France had a great relationship, and sort of developing the encyclopedia, etc. So this is where free thought, as it was called then, came to the fore. It had a little dip in the early 1800s and then sort of tailed off and then had a resurgence, certainly after Darwin, which we'll probably pick up on later on.
We will, but to pick one of the great figures of the Enlightenment, David Hume. For instance, Hume, although most people accept that he had no belief in a God, he never actually declared he was an atheist, which I find interesting.
Yeah. Well, this is a really interesting point about a lot of people like Hume, Locke, etc. It's always claimed that they never professed any particular atheism or non-belief. But really, you have to put that in the context of the time they were in, because it was quite dangerous to actually do that. You could have your funding cut off for your research, all sorts of things, if you didn't draw the line. So that's one of the reasons these things were not necessarily brought to the fore.
I think I was just going to say that even today, the difference between people who call themselves an atheist and the number of people that we would analytically consider to be atheists is quite great. So in this country, the highest number I've seen is sort of 10% of people who are willing to call themselves an atheist. But a good 20% do not believe in God, are happy to attach themselves to that statement. You can add another 20% of people who are formal agnostics. If we talk about people who would call themselves non-religious, who maybe don't like the term atheism for reasons we might get to today, talking about new atheism, then we're moving much higher into about the 50%. So this there's an issue about self-representation of atheism, and that's quite different from people who are in fact atheists.
It's very interesting, but all these people have been talking about Hume, the Frenchman, the Voltaire, Descartes, Diderot. They were all what we might call philosophical atheists, Simon. Mm. Something different happened in the middle of the 19th century, which really began with Darwin.
Yes, well, what Darwin provided, of course, was, I think, twofold. First of all, the emphasis on the continuity between human beings and other animals. That was a blow to a kind of religious conception of man as made in God's image, as somewhat close to the angels, as very much separate from the rest of animal creation. So that continuity had a big impact on people's self-conception. And secondly, he provided a plausible mechanism, or at least an open road to the mechanisms, whereby complex life forms could evolve. You no longer needed the watchmaker, the guiding hand of God, to set the whole show cranking along and arriving at us.
I want to bring us right up to date with The New Atheists, the work of Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Dennett and Hall, who are sometimes known as the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, partly because of what they're perceived to be the strident nature of their attack on religion. Why do you think it arose at that particular time, Simon?
Well, I imagine it got an audience at that particular time because of the perceived resurgence of radical Islam and the threat that it poses to our way of life, to the West.
Came not long after 9/11.
Exactly, and I think that made all the difference. Suddenly religion seemed to have claws, and in that context, people started really posing the question to themselves again.
Lewis?
I think that's quite right. I think we've had a very strong atheist culture in the UK now for several decades. And it's increasing. The number of people who don't believe in God increases very steadily. It's one of the most steady lines I've ever seen in statistical work in sociology. So the difference seems to be cultural and to do with a certain fear about the atheist position, which isn't necessarily justified. We have a lot of talk about resurgent religion, etc., but there aren't necessarily statistics to back that up, but there's a renewed visibility of religion, and that's led to a renewed visibility of atheism. And I think that's quite interesting when we reflect back on atheist cultures of the last we were talking about earlier in the end of the 19th century, often the cultures that are the most popular aren't the most popular because they have the best philosophical arguments. Right. They resonate in other ways, and we see with Marx and Freud, but with Marx an engagement with social issues of the time that the atheist arguments are getting attached to. Again, with the new atheists today, it's not necessarily that they're providing the best atheist argument per se, but they're engaging with real social fears. And what I think we should be doing is looking not at how well argued the writings and other broadcasts of the new atheists are, but what they're trying to say.
The other big issue, Mark, I guess, is creationism, especially in the United States, and the fear that creationist teaching was going to take over in schools.
This is a problem. There have been many court battles in America, various states and counties trying to keep creationists out of school. In fact, it's happening in the UK. There's an organisation that has been trying to creep into the back door in Scottish schools to teach creationism.
It's a very minor movement in the UK, it's got to be said, compared to the States.
Oh, it certainly is, but it's not absent.
Simon, if I were to say that the characteristics, as I see it, of the new atheists are that they base their critique on science, they are driven by a fear of what they perceive as obscurantism, whether it be militant Islam or creationism, and they're also very aggressive, quite militant. Do you think that's a fair summation?
I think it probably is. I think one ought to make a distinction between a straightforward scientific issue. As I see it, the age of the Earth is a straightforward scientific issue on which scientists are more or less unanimous, and people who think that we can make do with 6,000 years are just nuts. I think that kind of belief we should put to one side. The obscurantism of having a sort of fuzzy idea of a guiding providence or an old man in the sky who issues orders and so on, that's a very different order of belief, if indeed it's a belief at all, because it's partly a matter of adhering to certain kinds of ways of life, and those require sociological explanation. I hope we bring Durkheim in as one of the most interesting authors to have talked about the functions that religion actually serves in society, which I think is where the argument ought to go.
Well, if we're going to bring Durkheim in, we better bring him in now. And your point being that to understand religion properly, we don't just have to consider, or even primarily consider, belief systems. We have to consider the social context in which those beliefs are held.
Yes, and if I could just say, Marx believed that too. The famous remark about the opium of the people was in the context of saying that people need religion when their social circumstances are such that they have no other recourse. They need the consolations of religion.
Mark?
Yeah, I'd just like to pick up on the word militant. Militant, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, means combative and aggressive in support of a political or social cause and typically favouring extreme, violent or confrontational methods. Now, that doesn't apply to any of the atheists I know who use things like writing books and words in discussion. So I take objection to it, and I think it's really just a propaganda term used by religious apologists who do not like atheist arguments.
But I also think I was going to pick up on your use of the term aggressive even to describe the new atheists. To me, a lot of new atheist arguments are often defensive, and I work with atheists who have real fears about religion and society, and rather than engaging with those, we dismiss new atheism in a way as aggressive, rather than taking those concerns seriously. And in a way, atheists end up shooting themselves in the foot by saying this is purely a matter of philosophy. It means they can't say, I have a culture that I want to defend and I worry about under certain circumstances.
Well, let me remind you that you're listening to Beyond Belief, and today we're discussing contemporary atheism. In publishing terms, it's big business. Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens have made the bestseller lists, both here and in America, with books aiming to debunk religion. How do they differ from the atheists of a former generation? Why are they striking a chord now? And with me are Lois Lee, Mark Embleton and Simon Blackburn. Recently, as I've mentioned, a number of books have begun to explore the possibility of an atheist spirituality. Jeff Crocker's An Enlightened Philosophy, Can an Atheist Believe Anything, is among them. At university, he was a member of the Christian Union and he wrote Bible study guides. So what made him change his mind?
The factors which changed my position were multiple. One was a significant disappointment with how church life worked out, and I was involved in a particular set of power struggles, not for myself, but I saw a particular set of power struggles in church life that I felt compromised the concepts of the gospel. So there was significant disappointment in how church life worked out in some circles. But then there was also some fresh questioning of the doctrinal positions that I'd espoused, and particularly, actually, for me, the concept of forgiveness as it was understood by evangelical Christianity. And the third was that I was living and working in Russia a lot of my time, and I saw there a secular society where people clearly had no knowledge of even of the data of Christianity, because it had been thoroughly atheized, and yet were living very ethically aware and morally valuable lives. So I saw society with value but without faith.
But something still lingers. There's still a spiritual gap that you recognize and that you feel that you would like to be able to either recapture or retain.
Yes, because after this first shift, when I came, I guess rather reluctantly and slowly but surely, to an atheist conclusion, I realized that human spirituality is not ditched by a realization of atheism. In other words, if one comes to the conclusion that there isn't an external God feeding human spirituality, nevertheless, there is a spirituality which is somehow generated from the physicality of being alive, of being a human person, of being a human society. So I began to look for ways in which a different interpretation of religion might still be relevant to an atheist spirituality.
Does this basically mean that the sort of Dawkins position of physicalism, a sort of reductionist position, you find very off-putting?
Well, I think it's defective, because whilst I have a lot of respect for Dawkins and the hypothesis he has of complexity without design, I think it's a valid hypothesis. I'd go no further than that. Nevertheless, as you say, the ultimate reductionism to physicalism, I think, is an inadequate explanation of the human experience, because it has no account for anything metaphysical at all. So it has no account for ideas, it has no account for intellect, it has no account for feeling and emotion.
If you were asked very briefly to define what makes up your atheistic spirituality, what would you say?
That the simple physical does generate a metaphysical, and it generates an intellect, an emotion, and a spirituality. And that spirituality, therefore, needs some nurture, needs some consideration, needs living. What feeds it is a certainty inside that just as I have ideas from my physical being, just as I have emotions and feelings, so I have a spirituality. And I think in contemporary secular society, people are very concerned about their external attributes, their consumption levels, their lifestyle. But the question about what I'm like inside, whether I'm generous, whether I'm kind, whether I'm thoughtful, whether I'm polite, and is that worthwhile? What kind of human society do we want to build? And what kind of human being do I want to be as a member of that society? That's where the question of spirituality arises.
That was Jeff Crocker, who thinks he needs a spirituality, Mark.
Interesting. Let me just define spiritual again, shall we? Relating the human soul as opposed to material things, relating to religious or religious belief, is spiritual. For me, that is outside of the body. Everything that Jeff has spoken of so far, really, is inside the body. He wants to extrapolate to metaphysical and spiritual things which are outside the realm of human experience.
Well, he talked about emotion and ideas.
These are measurable mental phenomena, and that is well within the role of psychology.
Lewis?
I do think there's something interesting being raised by Jeff about the emotional and aesthetic and cultural sides of being non-religious that often get put to one side. For Dawkins, again, we've gone back to critiquing his arguments, but he's not only giving us a scientific argument, which we may or may not want to dispute the validity of, he's also giving a scientistic argument, and that's about taking a real joy and finding meaning in scientific cultures. And these are important in my research, which I work with people living their everyday lives and who go through rites of passage, who deal with bereavements and so on and so forth. turning to narratives that relate to science, and this is not the only atheist narrative there is, but that can be a massive source of support, a way of conceiving how a person's participated in the world. They may have added to our body of accumulated knowledge, and that might help us cope with the loss that we're coping with. Richard Dawkins is incredibly popular, and I think that tells us something about precisely the emotional and aesthetic value that new atheism has.
Simon, does something need to replace religion to provide people with the things that religion provides them all? Because we've already touched on the fact that religion is not primarily to do with doctrine. It's also to do with where you get your identity from. Some people get it in congregations. Some people get it at football matches.
Yes. I think it's clear that religions fulfil some function. Otherwise, they wouldn't survive as they do. They wouldn't have had the impact on history that they have. I don't think it's a sufficient explanation to say that it was the infancy of the human race, it was childish explanations which have just outlived their time. I think the functions are primarily social and emotional. It's a matter of binding people into congregations, of, as it were, affirming the social against the individual sometimes. So I think they do fulfill a function, and atheists have to look to whether they are as confident that they often seem that they are, or as we seem that we are, that we can provide substitutes or do without those functions. I think the jury's out.
Lewis, it begs the question, does atheism need to have a movement? Does it need a positive content as opposed to just the negative of being anti-religious belief?
Well, I do think the word atheism is points at the sort of thinnest aspect of what atheism really is all about in terms of being a cultural movement. I don't think it comes back to this difference between the number of people who want to call themselves atheists and the number of people that are atheists. And if we look at the much larger population of people who are atheists in practice, they do have a lot of social and cultural aspects to their atheism that we're not always aware of. The very fact that we call it atheism makes it hard to get at these things sometimes. There's a real poverty of our language in terms of understanding what it means to be an atheist. Part of my own research, for example, is talking with people about the atheism, theism, spirituality and so on of their family and friends. And people who think that their own atheism doesn't matter, maybe they feel like they're basically neutral towards religions and it's not a big part of their lives. If you then start talking about their relationships with their husbands, wives, friends, family, it will emerge that this aspect has played some part. It will be long conversations with friends at the beginning of their relationship, which seems to be some premise, some common understanding that becomes a premise of their friendship later on. It will be that people can't conceive of marrying someone who's not atheist in the same way that they are, and everyone has different ways of describing these things. So I'm not sure it's true to say it's not a social phenomenon.
But you see, part of the problem is that people don't know really what atheism means, because just as it seems to me sometimes when the new atheists are talking that they seem to think that Christianity is a homogenous group, it is the same within atheism, and part of the context of this programme is to try to tease out those differences, because I sense, Mark, that there is a fundamental difference between your approach to atheism and Simon's, for instance.
Well, the word you just used there, homogenous, is one I was just going to come in with. An atheist are not a homogenous group. From my point of view, as a campaigning organisation for Atheism UK, if we want to get atheists together, it is very difficult. We have some who are very up for the cause, but we have other atheists who are prepared just to be passive atheists, and they're quite happy to sit in their armchair at home, and as long as religion doesn't bother me, I won't bother religion.
Well, you see, that's very interesting, because Lewis, that suggests to me that in the 19th century, Christianity was the default position in this country. You didn't have to make an active decision to belong to a Christian community. Nowadays, if you belong to a Christian community, you sort of do have to make that decision, and you may make it for a variety of different reasons. But atheism is now the default position. And if you can't identify exactly what it is that atheists have in common, apart from an aversion to religion, then it's quite difficult to bind themselves together into a group.
Partly I'd go back to what I've just said, that there are informal networks of non-religious people already in existence. And part of the problem is the lack of the sort of poor conceptualisation of atheism and other terms related to non-religion and the secular, which means people don't know how to describe the nuances to their position. In fact, I'd say one of the reasons new atheism has been as popular as and as successful as it has been is it provides a very clear representation of atheism that people who are atheists but don't like New Atheism can argue against. And that gives one way of starting to describe a position that for the last few decades you might not have needed to ever describe. And that process is really in its very early days, I would say. I think we're at the beginning of a process in which these groupings will develop quite substantially.
Simon?
Yes, I think I agree with that. I mean, atheism, simply meaning lack of belief in something like a personal God or a providence governing things, doesn't provide a unifying cement, a kind of social grouping like being a follower of Tottenham Hotspur or something. But of course, atheists may form all sorts of groups. I think for a society, the question is always going to eventually be a moral and political one. What are the ideas which we want to live by? And unless you provide those ideas from somewhere, then you do run the risk of falling foul of G.K. Chesterton's famous remark that the trouble with people who don't believe in God is that they'll believe in anything. And you have to you have to be sure that the fundamental values that we want people to live by are implemented somewhere and somehow. And that may be part of what Jeff Crocker was on about when he talked about spirituality. But of course, there's no problem with deriving a humanist secular morality. It's a task, though, that needs to be done.
I want to ask each one of you a final question. Are there common areas where religion and atheism can come together for constructive dialogue, Mark?
Well, I'm always open to dialogue, but as the situation is presently, where we have this very real tension between secularism or atheism, non-belief, and religion, as we've just been talking about, new atheists, etc., militant atheism, it's very difficult for me at the moment to see a way forward.
Lewis?
I think we need to conceptualise and understand atheist and non-religious positions much better. And in so doing, we'll be able to recognise those positions. And hopefully as a result of that, that defensive edge and the certainly aggressive aspect to anti-religious aspect, really, to some of these debates, we'll be able to work through. But I think that the first step has to be properly recognising atheist culture and treating it with the same way we treat religion in order to get to that point.
Simon?
I think that the task of educating every new generation into the ideas, the concepts, the morality, the political philosophy that we want to define our way of life is that's a perpetual task. Even Christians are human, and they might have contributed something to that. Insofar as they have, we need to learn from it. Insofar as they've peddled a distorted and false morality, then we need to reject it and transcend it. So I'm up for dialogue with just about everybody who's tried to think seriously about human life.
Well, that's all for this week. My thanks to Lewis Lee, Mark Embledon and Simon Blackburn. I'll be back at the same time next week. Do join me.